Your Health is supported by the North Carolina Cancer Hospital, serving you with innovative research and unequaled care. UNC Healthcare is leading, teaching, caring.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community. As Drs. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health on 97.9 The Hill and on demand at chapelboro.com.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein. And I want to welcome our guest co-host, Dr. Stephen Hooper. And Stephen, we're actually going to dedicate the entire show today to talking about the problem of addiction, opioid addiction, potentially alcohol addiction, addiction of all really kinds here. And it's precipitated by a new book that's just come out by a friend of mine, Saving Bobby. And I want to welcome to Your Health, Renee Hodges.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here, Adam.
Stephen, you were talking about some of the statistics here that are just mind-boggling that we want our listeners to understand as we enter into this conversation.
Yes, I think this is really critical. Glad that we're going to spend an extended amount of time today. But the whole sort of opioid issue started out as a good thing to control pain. And now today, 42,000 Americans die from opioid overdoses. This is about nearly a 30% increase compared to just 2015, 3 years ago. And deaths from fentanyl and other synthetic opioids have doubled. This is just staggering numbers that you won't find in almost any other aspect of substance abuse.
And when we throw into this other substances of abuse, including alcohol, nicotine, cocaine, we know that this affects most American families or close friends of their families. If you're a family that's escaped it in some way, you may be unique.
Lucky.
Agreed.
You know, before we dive into this, because as I mentioned at the outset, Renee, we've known each other for years, our friends. My son entered high school and has been friends with your son for well over the last decade. How did you get interested at all in understanding this issue of opioid and addictions?
Well, it was quite by accident. And it started one day when I got a phone call from my brother who asked me for some advice. And in my family, we have a long history of addiction. I have an alcoholic grandfather. I have an uncle who died of alcoholism. I have two siblings that have had problems. One is in long-term recovery. And then I have my nephew, Bobby. And that was my brother's son, and he became an opioid/heroin addict while he was in college because he had been prescribed an opioid for a chronic back ailment. And because we didn't talk about addiction in our families, none of us knew that we all had a predisposition to addiction. Because addiction can be passed down. It's a disease, just like heart disease or lung disease, breast cancer. We didn't talk about it, so Bobby had no idea that he was predisposed to addiction. He started taking OxyContin, and if you ask him, he said, bingo, that he knew it immediately. This was his drug of choice. By the time he graduated from college, he was a full-blown addict, and was promptly sent off to the first of many, many rehab and treatment centers that he visited over the next 7 years.
And his, from the very outset, he had started out as a positive thing to control pain.
Yes, it did.
So this was not sort of a deliberate, I'm going to go down this path. It was he had a pain, he got it treated, and therein began the falling of the dominoes.
Yes, and I believe so many, especially back then, this was in 2006, before we openly talked about this epidemic and openly talked about how addictive opioids can be. And that is what happened to Bobby. He was given the prescription. He started taking his dosage, but then he started needing more and more. He really liked the way it felt. And then he started doing it recreationally. And before you knew it, he couldn't do without.
How old was Bobby at that point in time when he got the prescription? And
he was 21. He was a junior in college. He did graduate eventually, but it took him several extra years. But he did graduate from college, but he was still a full-blown addict at that time. And once he graduated, I believe that was the first time he OD'd, and that was when the first intervention happened. But my family didn't talk about addiction, so I was not really aware of what was going on. And when my brother called me, he asked me for advice. This is 6-7 years after Bobby had graduated from college and had been in and out of treatments. I don't even know the number of treatments, but he would go to rehab, he would start recovery, he would be released, and then he would repeat. It was this chronic cycle.
Both inpatient, outpatient.
Yes, yes. He could not stay substance free.
And we know that this is a hallmark of many people's path through addiction and recovery and
yes,
re-addiction and re-recovery. And
yes.
But what is remarkable is this was not your first experience dealing with addiction. You had had a close friend and that friend's son that had a really tragic outcome that really was influencing you about the same time that Bobby was reentering your life.
Yes, my best friend's son had struggled with addiction since his early teens. So I was her support system. So I knew what addiction could do to a family and to the child, to the community. But what I wasn't prepared for was that on the day that Bobby came to live with me was the same day that my best friend's son OD'd and died of heroin. And I think it was the odd coincidence of these two momentous things happening at the same time that really made me determined to be Bobby's caregiver. I didn't want what happened to my friend's son to happen to Bobby.
You describe in your book a little bit about yourself that I think might be really important for our our listeners here about who you are. And you said that God has blessed and cursed you with the capacity to feel things deeply, that my highs are gold medal winning euphoria, my lows will bring me to my knees, and you can see into the recesses of people's soul. How did that start to manifest as it relates to interacting with your loved one?
I've always loved to connect with people. It's been something that I do feel is a great gift. I also feel that the empathetic nature of my personality can curse me in ways too, because I don't just feel sometimes, I feel too much. But as it relates to Bobby, it probably was a gift to Bobby because I wanted so badly to connect and help him, not only because of the tragedy of my best friend's son, but because I felt like there was something there that I was missing, and I was like a bulldog. I wouldn't leave him alone, poor kid. But that's my personality, really. It drove me to try to find anything that I could find. I didn't know that I was doing it at the time. It's only in hindsight all my lessons were learned, Adam.
Well, we're going to start to delve into some of those lessons, but we're going to need to take a short break. When we return, we're going to continue this special conversation with Renee Hodges, author of Saving Bobby, Heroes and Heroine in One Small Community, about her nephew's journey back from opioid addiction. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Stephen Hooper. Stay with us. UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Stephen Hooper. We're continuing our conversation with Renee Hodges, author of Saving Bobby, About Her Nephew's Journey Back from Opioid Addiction. Right before we left off, you had mentioned that your best friend's son had died, and Bobby had just come into your life with so many unknowns for you, and yet you had to go to a funeral, and you had to be there for your best friend, and you invited him to come to the funeral. Why did you think about that?
It was a very difficult time for not only me, but my whole family, because we had been very close to this young adult that passed away. And when Bobby came, I knew he was suffering from the same addiction that took my best friend's son. So I thought I needed to be open and honest and make sure that he knew he was coming into a household that was grieving. I felt that not to tell him that would do all of us a disservice. He did know my friend. He did not know my friend's son. So when I told him that my friend's son had OD'd and died and that the funeral was in several days, I gave him the choice to come with us. And I said, you can either sit here and not go to the funeral, or you can come to the funeral and support my friend, who was also someone he knew, and support us, and to see just how devastating it is to a family when they lose someone to addiction.
What a thoughtful, gut-wrenching sort of situation to be in. But in addition to the grieving process, it also shows the loving process. And to invite him into that process, as confused as he may have been as well, I think was maybe your first lesson. You talked about lessons along the way. And I wonder if that wasn't one sort of in hindsight that sort of reeled him in to say, we're together in the good and the bad.
I think that could be true, because I did from the very beginning was very open and honest with him. I never hid my feelings, unless it was something that he didn't need to know. But for the most part, during our relationship, we were very open and honest, completely, for the 16 months that he stayed with me.
You know, I wonder, as you began this journey, you built up a team. Tell us who were some of the major players in that team. And then I want to focus in a little bit on how you talked about this team with family and friends, and maybe even then have you read something to us.
I would love to talk about my team. I call it my community, for lack of a better word, because it reached so many different people. The first part of the team, and very important to me, is I did hire a professional. I hired a psychologist to help me. I knew I was in over my head. And I had never dealt with addiction or recovery to this extent. So a professional for myself was important. There was a professional for Bobby. He had his own counselor that he could trust and open up to, where I didn't have to be nosy Aunt Nay all the time. And I felt that was so important that he had someone who could guide him, because I, as I said, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a counselor, I'm not a social worker. He needed a professional.
Because he had not just opioid addiction, he had problems with alcohol and
yes,
other prescription drugs and,
yes,
and all kinds of things.
That's exactly right. And so he had to talk with someone about his whole recovery process. Each recovery is unique, and Bobby's was unique to himself. And so he had his own problems, and that's why his professional and his physician, because he came to Durham originally to get his chronic back ailment looked at. So he had a medical physician as well as a drug counselor to help him through the process. But the rest of the community, it spanned friends, it spanned family, it spanned church. My book clubs, my tennis team, my, you name it, they became my community. I was overwhelmed, and I did not know what to do with this young man, and I needed help. And so I did what I guess I do a lot. I just asked for help, and I was open and honest. I said in an email to as many people as I could, my nephew is here. These are his problems. I need your help and support. He needs your help and support. If you have odd jobs, he needs friends. He needs to be a part of our community. Would you please consider calling him and helping us out? And they came out of the woodwork. It was overwhelmingly wonderful, from offers to go to baseball games and to dinner, to have ice cream, to go to church, to join a dart team, looking for jobs for him. Everyone tried to give what they could when they could give it.
Can you describe and read that section in the book that tells us how you were thinking about this?
Certainly. So this is right after I wrote the email to my community. Reaching out to my friends had been an easy decision. In fact, I never really questioned it. I simply decided to be open and honest about Bobby's disease from the very beginning. There was no hiding under a bushel, no secrets, no denial from any of us. When Bobby arrived in Durham, I was ready to join his fight, but intuitively, I knew I couldn't go it alone. I couldn't deny or avoid what was happening in our household and in our lives. I couldn't pretend that he was healthy and just visiting his aunt and uncle to get a fresh start in a new town. And I wasn't going to have the burden of lying to myself. And I sure wasn't going to lie to my friends and family. Anyway, what would have been the point of that? Bobby had a disease, and he needed everyone's support, love, and understanding, not the devastating impact of silence or the hurtful and sad avoidance of cover-up. Lying, manipulation, spinning, evasion, and deception are already a part of the addictive process. I didn't want it to be a part of the recovery process, too.
Very powerful. May I ask, before we go to break, you are dealing with your own family. You have your community that you're now linking into. What is Bobby doing and thinking and feeling at this point? Is he accepting these invitations? Where was he in this?
That
evolution?
Is a great question, because when Bobby came to us, I thought he was several weeks out of another recovery center. And so I was thinking, we're going to get his back looked at, and then he's going to go get a job and an apartment, and he is going to be normal because he is substance free and he has just been discharged from a recovery center. And that, in fact, was so far from the truth. Bobby had so many other issues coming out of the recovery center that I feel so many others that are being discharged have the same issues. And one is shame and stigma. It's a huge problem. They tend to become very depressed when they do leave a recovery center. Recoverers tend to isolate. But for Bobby, and for a lot of them, he had no job, he had no money, he had no job skills, nor training. He had huge gaps in his resume. He didn't have friends because he couldn't go back to his old friends. So he had no place to go. He couldn't get an apartment. He couldn't go back home because that's where the triggers were. Technology had just left him behind during the time that he was in recovery. He didn't know what was happening in the world. He didn't know what was happening in politics or sports. Bobby was not ready to be out in the world. And I feel like this is a time that we need to have a conversation about, this recovery time. It's a very vulnerable time for those that have just been discharged and have the tools for recovery, but now we need to help them learn to use these tools.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll continue our conversation with Renee Hodges, author of Saving Bobby, Heroes and Heroine in One Small Community, about our nephew's journey back from opioid addiction. We'll be right back with your health. Stay with us.
Your Health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Stephen Hooper. We've been talking with Renee Hodges, author of Saving Bobby, about her nephew's journey back from opioid addiction. Right before the break, Renee, you really talked about opening up to so many people, not just the therapists, your therapist, Bobby's doctor, but to your family and friends to figure out how to embrace Bobby. And I'm wondering, how did Bobby respond to that? And was this something new and different for him, or had he experienced efforts like this in the past, but he's experiencing it now in a different way?
I think this was a new and different experience for Bobby. I think because I didn't know how to deal with addiction, and so I chose to go this way of openness to my community with his permission. Bobby wouldn't have cared what I did. He was despondent. He was depressed. He had just left this recovery center, and I couldn't understand where he was mentally. So he really, I could have said, go eat chocolate roaches, and he would have done that. He was so used to having somebody telling him what to feel and what to say and where to go and how to do it that when he came to me, it was the same thing. He would have done anything. I just needed to tell him.
You get sort of handcuffed that you really can't make decisions for yourself, except in many instances, bad ones. You've shared about your family and the community and Bobby, but I'm curious about where Bobby's family was. Were you communicating with them? Was he communicating with them? What was being said?
Thank you for asking that question. Bobby's family, my brother and his wife and my niece, they had been through 7 years of doing everything that they knew to do to try to help Bobby stay substance free. And as we know, he kept repeating the process, as most addicts do. So when Bobby came to me to get a new start, the family, I write in the book a lot about it because I was a little bit angry at them at first until I put myself in their shoes. I realized that it wasn't tough love that they were doing. It was really clear love for Bobby. They loved him from afar. And I believe that for Bobby, at least, it was the change in geography and the change in caregivers and standing far enough away that he could see just what his addiction had done to his family and what it continued to do. That allowed him to finally see and choose to save himself and become substance free.
Was his family accepting of this? Were they angry? Were they embarrassed? I mean, he's a young man now.
Yes.
And so I'm curious, I mean, how were they
responding
to you?
He was 28 years old when he came to me. His sister had pretty much disowned him because Bobby was acting out. She needed to cut ties. His mother never gave up. His father never gave up, but they needed to give over. They continued to give him financial support. They also continued to keep in touch with me the whole time. But they also knew when to draw the line for personal interactions. But they did everything they could for Bobby, and they kept in touch with Bobby's drug counselor as well. It was an interesting process for me because it felt to me to be the main caregiver. And I didn't understand that. But in hindsight, it really was the best decision for Bobby.
And they were part of the team that you were putting together, would you say?
They were part of the team. Even though they weren't there daily or every minute, or they were there behind me and behind Bobby every step of the way.
You knew perhaps a piece of you. I'm certain that relapse is part of recovery cycles. And were you surprised when Bobby had a relapse? And can you talk about that process and how that ultimately played into recovery or the kinds of experiences that you had to go through since he was in your family now?
I think this is a recovery book for myself as well. I had to recover from the shame and stigma of growing up in a family that was based in addiction. And so when Bobby relapsed again, I was surprised. I don't know why I was surprised. I just never even gave it a thought that he was going to relapse. I feel that in hindsight, because all my lessons were learned in hindsight, that I could have done other things differently, but the recovery is really Bobby's, and he had to choose to recover. And no matter what I did and how much you do for caregiving for your loved one, ultimately the recovery is their recovery. And I'm so thankful that he immediately came back and said, this is not who I want to be. I don't want to go through this again. I don't want to fail. And really, truly, that probably was the turning point for Bobby from there on out, was after that last relapse.
What did you see differently, if anything, after that experience? And did you know that it was different at the time, that something was happening differently?
I think for both of us, it was different. I always threw out all these lines, you know, that Bobby, we all make mistakes and we all, you know, all those cliches. But really, truly, I believe it. And I would tell him, I'm saying, you did, you made a mistake. But it's the make of a man, how you come back from it. Let's go. Put it behind you. Let's keep going. And he did. But he had to do it. But he did have a lot of cheerleaders behind him in the community.
I think, Renee, that's a real important component of this, because I do believe that he did it himself, but he did it in the context of support and love and honesty, you know. And he received that in a way with his own makeup and his own strengths and weaknesses to sort of put it forward. But it's not always the case, as you know, with families that just – they don't make it in those contexts, even under the best of circumstances. So, you know, there's a secret sauce here that you had somewhere, and I'm wondering what it might have been.
Well, I always tell Bobby, secrets make you sick. I was surprised, though, Steve, by, at once I was open and honest, just how powerful that was, because people started stopping me in the grocery store or when I'm walking the dog and saying, my son, you know, you thought that he was off on a gap year, but he's been in and out of rehab for years. Or my sister, people I'd known for a long time, they had been, because addiction, it affects all of us. It affects the family member as well as those that are addicted. Wouldn't that shame and stigma? And until we can erase that, and I think because I opened up, people began opening up. And I found that a very powerful thing in my household as well. And that created for Bobby a sense of self-esteem. His self-esteem slowly developed, and I watched it, the things that he was doing. You could tell every time somebody would call him to do something.
Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're actually going to talk about self-esteem and how Bobby used that to create new possibilities for him and where he's at now. We're talking with Renee Hodges, author of Saving Bobby, about her nephew's journey back from opioid addiction. We're going to take a short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of 97.9 The Hill and UNC Family Medicine. And now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Stephen Hooper. We've been talking with Renee Hodges, author of a new book called Saving Bobby, about her nephew's journey back from opioid addiction. And before the break, you talked about the community of people who helped Bobby remove shame. And you have a story about how it works and perhaps how it also gets better.
I do. And this story is not in the book, but it's such an important story to Bobby. And it happened right after I had sent out the email to my community asking, being open and honest, asking them for help. Bobby got a text. And I was in the kitchen, my back to him, and he came into the kitchen and he said, "Aunt Nay," he goes, "Mrs. Woolman, she just texted me and she wants me to walk her dog." And I'm like, "Oh, that's great. That's great. You know, you need the money, Bobby." He's like, "No, no, no, you don't understand. She wants me to walk her dog." So I heard something in his voice. So I turned around and I'm looking at him. And he's going, "Aunt Nay, Mrs. Woolman wants me to walk her dog. She trusts me to walk her dog." He said, "No one has trusted me since I first became addicted to opioids while I was in college. No one has ever trusted me with anything." I was blown away. And then he said, "I am not going to fail. I am going to be the best damn dog walker." And he was.
Really, this book is a transformation because you didn't set out to write a book. You said Bobby asked you to write about things.
He did. Writing a book and publishing, it wasn't on my bucket list. But when he came to me after the 16 months and he was going off on his own, leaving the nest, he was more than ready. He said, "Aunt Nay," he goes, "do you mind writing down my story? Because I don't remember a lot of it, and I don't ever want to go back to where I was then. If I ever think that I'm going to go back there, I want to read it and know. I want to go forward." And so I was like, well, sure. So it was easy because I didn't empty the trash on my computer, so all I had to do was go to the trash and pull out all my emails and all my text on my phone. My kids, they're going to laugh when they hear this. But I started there, and I journaled every night that I was under really, really a lot of stress and anxiety, and I couldn't go to sleep. I would pull out my computer, and I would journal to myself. It was a way to soothe myself so that I could put it all away and close my eyes. I had all those journal entries. And so when I put it all together and gave it to my book club to look at, because they were part of the community, they had been through this process, they were interested in books, I thought they would be perfect to look at this. They said, "Oh, this is powerful. You need to publish this. But before you do, do you mind if I send it to my friend out in Oregon, or that I send it to my cousin?" Or, and all of a sudden, it started happening that I had to call Bobby and say, "Bobby, I'm sorry, but I think it's already going slightly viral." And he goes, "Well, you know, what do we have to hide? There's no shame. There's no blame." He goes, "I want to help others, and if our story can help others, let's publish." So I went back and I rewrote it as a memoir to connect the dots, but it was really never meant for the public to read, which is why it's such a vulnerable account and why it's so raw, because you are feeling and seeing what a caregiver goes through as I go through it. And it can be heart-wrenching at times, but also it's extremely hopeful and very encouraging, and it's a success story.
And all done within the context of honesty.
I had to be honest, too, because I wasn't sure that I wanted to put myself out there. But I felt that it would be a little bit hypocritical for me to be talking about the blame and shame when I realized that I carried so much myself. Writing this book was extremely therapeutic for me and for my own recovery.
Can you read the concluding two paragraphs of your book? And then we're going to hear some of Bobby's words about what he's experienced, because he's doing well.
He is doing
so well. And he's incredibly accomplished. And
yes, he
you
is.
Must be so proud of where he's at and what he's done.
The clip we're going to play is from
Renee's the book
webpage,
trailer, I believe, which is where you can see his journey and how he transformed. Okay, so here are the last two paragraphs from my final remarks. I am not a licensed physician, social worker, or counselor. I am one of the millions of everyday people tragically affected by addiction. I began writing this story for my nephew, but in the end, I realized I was writing this story for myself and for all of us affected by the helplessness of addiction. Addiction grows its power from secrecy and shaming. Being honest and open brought a community together and saved a young man's life, while opening our eyes wide to the scourge of this millennial generation, opioid and heroin addiction. This story isn't about shaming or parenting failures or what we could have done differently. It is about answering the question, what can we do to help each other? This widespread prescription drug abuse has created an epidemic which is affecting darn near all of us. And I see no reason why we shouldn't wage this battle together, leaning on and supporting each other, as was done for Bobby and me by my community. This is Bobby's story, but it is also the story of so many others, most of whom are fighting for their lives in a shamed silence. But it is also my story, and silence has never been my way.
My name is Bobby. This book was written so I would never forget where I was, how much I accomplished, and where I came from.
I spent most of my 20s in and out of treatment, treatment ranging from 30 days to 13 months. There was something missing, something that I just struggled to let go of. As I look back now, I can see it was shame. It was the shame of being an addict, almost as if I just didn't feel accepted. And in 2013, I didn't have anywhere else to go, and I went to live with my Aunt Renee.
Addiction is a disease, and it's not a parenting problem, or it's not something that should be shameful.
Being part of a community that embraced me and allowed me to believe in myself helped my journey through recovery to begin. And it wasn't until I could believe in myself that I could start getting better.
Community helped lessen the shame and stigma of his disease, and ultimately helped Bobby save himself. They gave him love, they gave him faith, they gave him trust, they gave him his self-esteem back.
I was centered around people that did care for me and they loved me, and it's a great feeling knowing that people see you for who you are, and they don't see you for what you've gone through.
If I could get the word out that recovery is just beginning once they leave rehab, I think we could really help.
Slowly I started seeing that I did deserve to be happy, and I started to become happy.
There's so much more we can do, and I feel that I wrote this because we must do more. And Bobby's story is important. He ultimately saved himself, but I feel we can save so many more.
Thank you, Renee, for putting yourself out there, putting Bobby's story in front of us so that we can understand and learn. We both know the difficulties of people we love being lost at a young age. And I know that your book will make a difference. Bobby's stories will make a difference in the lives of thousands of people across the United States who need a little bit of hope in a time and place that it oftentimes feels hopeless. Thank you for providing the hope and the love and the support necessary to believe that recovery can and does occur.
Thank you, too, for having me and letting me share this story.
This will conclude the special edition of Your Health Today where we've had a wonderful conversation with Renee Hodges, author of Saving Bobby. We'll put a link up on our website so that our listeners can get a copy. On behalf of your health, I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And I'm Stephen Hooper.
And we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Take care.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 The Hill, presented by UNC Family Medicine. You can find this or any other episode of Your Health on demand at chapelboro.com. Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page on 97.9 The Hill, your community radio station.